My Soul Waits by John Owen. Psalm 130, verse 5. I wait for the Lord. My soul waits, and in His word do I hope. My soul waits for the Lord more than they that watch for the morning. I say more than they that watch for the morning. I have, says David, waited for or expected Jehovah. He uses the same name of God in his expectation that he had first fixed on in his application to him. And it is not this or that means, not this or that assistance, but it is Jehovah himself that he expects and waits for. It is Jehovah himself that must satisfy the soul. His favor and loving kindness and what flows from them, if he doesn't come himself, if he doesn't give of himself, nothing else will relieve. My soul waits or expects. It is no outward duty that I am at, no lip labor, no bodily work, no formal, cold, careless performance of a duty. No. My soul waits. It is soul work, heart work I'm at. I wait with my whole soul. But yet, all this that we have spoken doesn't reach the intenseness of the soul of the psalmist. And this is expectation of Jehovah. The earnest engagement of his soul in this duty rises up above what he can express. Therefore, he proceeds, my soul, he says, waits for the Lord. That is, expects him, looks for him, waits for him, waits for his coming to me in love and with forgiveness, more than the watchers for the morning. The frame of his spirit in and the manner of his performance. Relation one to another. We have then the expression of the duty in which he was exercised, and that is earnest waiting for Jehovah. The bottom and foundation of that, his waiting and expectation, that is the word of God, the word of promise. He diligently hoped in the word. The frame of his spirit in and a manner of his performance of this duty expressed in the words themselves that he uses, in the emphatical reduplication, yea, triplication of his expression of it. I wait for the Lord. My soul waits for God. In the comparison instituted between his discharge of his duty and other performances of a corporal watch, with the greatest care and diligence, more than they that watch for the morning. So that we have the duty he performed, earnest, waiting in expectation. The object of his waiting, Jehovah himself. His support in that duty, the word of promise. The manner of his performance of it, with earnestness and diligence, with perseverance. Let us then now consider the words as they contain the frame and working of a sin-entangled soul. Having been raised out of his depths by the discovery of forgiveness in God, as was before declared, yet not being immediately made partaker of that forgiveness as to a comforting sense of it, he gathers up his soul from wandering from God and supports it from sinking under his present condition. It is, he says, Jehovah alone, with whom is forgiveness, that can relieve and do me good. His favor, his loving kindness, his communication of mercy and grace from this, is that which I stand in need of. On him, therefore, do I with all heedfulness attend. On him do I wait. My soul is filled with expectation from him. Surely he will come to me. He will come and refresh me, though he seem as yet to be afar off, and to leave me in these depths. Yet I have his word of promise to support and stay my soul, on which I will lean until I obtain the enjoyment of him, and his kindness which is better than life. And this is the frame of a sin-entangled soul who has really by faith discovered forgiveness in God, but is not yet made partaker of a comforting, refreshing sense of it. And we may represent it with these observations. The first proper fruit of faith, discovery of forgiveness in God, to a sin-distressed soul is waiting in patience and expectation. The proper object of a sin-distressed soul's waiting and expecting is God Himself as reconciled in Christ. I have waited for Jehovah. The word of promise is a soul's great support in waiting for God. In your word do I hope. Sin-distressed souls wait for God with earnest intention of mind, diligence, and expectation from the redoubling of the expression. Continuance in waiting until God appears to the soul is necessary and prevailing. Necessary is that without which we cannot attain assistance, and prevailing is that in which we shall never fail. Establishment in waiting, when there is no present sense of forgiveness, yet gives a soul much secret rest and comfort. This observation arises from the influence that these verses have to those that follow. The psalmist, having attained thus far, can now look about him and begin to deal with others, and exhort them to an expectation of grace and mercy. And thus, though the soul be not absolutely in the haven of consolation where it would be, yet it is cast out an anchor that gives it establishment and security. Though it be yet tossed, yet it is secured from shipwreck, and is rather sick than in danger. A waiting condition is a condition of safety. Hence it is that he now turns himself to others, and upon the experience of the discovery that he had made of forgiveness in God, in the establishment and consolation he found in waiting on him, he calls upon and encourages others to the same duty. The propositions laid down I shall briefly pass through, still with respect to the state and condition of the soul represented in the psalm. Many things that might justly be insisted on in the improvement of these truths have been anticipated in our former general rules. To them we must therefore sometimes have recourse, because they must not be again repeated. On this account, I say, we shall pass through them with all briefness possible. I wait. The first proper fruit of faith's discovery of forgiveness in God, to a sin-distressed soul, is waiting in patience and expectation. This the psalmist openly and directly applies himself to, and expresses to have been as his duty, so his practice. And he does it so emphatically, as is manifested in the opening of the words, that I don't know that any duty is anywhere in the scripture so recommended and lively represented to us. You must, therefore, for the right understanding of it, call to mind what has been spoken concerning the state of the soul inquired into, its depths, entanglements, and sense of sin, with its application to God about those things. As also remember what has been delivered about the nature of forgiveness, with a revelation that is made of it to the faith of believers. And that this may be done where the soul has no refreshing sense of its own interest in it. It does not know that its own sins are forgiven, although it believes that there is forgiveness with God. Now the principal duty that is incumbent on such a soul is that laid down in the proposition, namely, patient waiting and expectation. Two things must be done in reference to this. First, the nature of the duty itself is to be declared, and secondly, the necessity and usefulness of its practice is to be evinced and demonstrated. How are we to wait? For the nature of it. Something has been intimated, giving light into it, in the opening of the words here used by the psalmist to express it by. But we may observe that these duties as required of us do not consist in any particular acting of the soul, but in the whole spiritual frame and deportment of it, in reference to the end aimed at in and by them. And its waiting, as here and elsewhere commended to us, and which is comprehensive of the special duties of the soul, in a case insisted on and described, comprehends the three things. Quietness, in opposition to haste and tumultuating of spirit. Diligence, in opposition to spiritual sloth, despondency and neglect of the means. Expectation, in opposition to despair, distrust, and other proper immediate actings of unbelief. First, quietly. Hence, this waiting itself is sometimes expressed by silence. To wait is to be silent. It is good both to hope and to be silent for the salvation of the Lord. That is, to wait quietly, as we have rendered the word. In the same word we render sometimes to rest. Rest on the Lord. Be silent to Him. Where it is joined with hoping or waiting is that which belongs to the nature of it. And so, in sundry other places. And this God, in a special manner, calls souls to, in straits and distresses. In quietness and confidence, He says, shall be your strength. And the effect of the righteousness of God by Christ is said to be quietness and assurance forever. First, quietness, and then assurance. Now the silence and quietness which accompanies waiting, yea, waiting which is essential part of it, is opposed first to haste, and haste is the soul's undue lifting up of itself, proceeding from a weariness of its condition to press after and in of its troubles, not according to the conduct of the Spirit of God. Thus, when God calls His people to waiting, He expresses the contrary acting to this duty by the lifting up of the soul. Though the vision tarry, wait for it. Behold, His soul which is lifted up is not upright in Him, but the just shall live by his faith. God has given to the soul a vision of peace through the discovery of that forgiveness which is with Him, but He will have us wait for an actual participation of it to rest and comfort. He that will not do so but lifts up his soul, that is, in making haste beyond the rule and method of the Spirit of God in this manner, his heart is not upright in him, nor will he know what it is to live by faith. This ruins and disappoints many a soul in its attempts for forgiveness. The prophet, speaking of this manner, tells us that he believes shall not, nor will not, make haste, which words the apostle twice makes use of. In both places he renders them, whosoever believes on him shall not be ashamed or confounded, and that because this haste turns men off from believing, and so disappoints their hopes and leaves them to shame and confusion. Men, with a sense of the guilt of sin, having some discovery made to them of the rest, ease, and peace which they may obtain to their souls by forgiveness, are ready to catch greedily at it, and to make false, unsound, undue applications of it to themselves. They cannot bear the yoke that the Lord has put upon them, but grow impatient under it, and cry with Rachel, give me children, or else I die. Anyway, they can obtain it. Now, as the first duty of such a soul is to apply itself to waiting, so the first entrance into waiting consists in the silence and quietness of heart and spirit. This is the soul's endeavor to keep itself humble, satisfied with the sovereign pleasure of God in its condition, and refusing all ways and means of rest and peace but what it is guided and directed to by the Word and Spirit. Secondly, as it is opposed to haste, so it is to tumultuating thoughts and vexatious disquietments. The soul is silent. I was dumb, and I opened not my mouth because you did it. He redoubles the expression, in which he sets out his endeavor to quiet and still his soul in the will of God. In the condition discoursed of, the soul is apt to have many tumultuating thoughts, or a multitude of perplexing thoughts, of no use or advantage to it, how they are to be washed against and rejected, was before declared in our general rules. Disquietness and waiting will prevent them. And this is a fur thing and a duty prescribed. Secondly, diligently. Diligence in opposition to spiritual sloth is included in it also. Diligence is the activity of the mind and the regular use of means for the pursuit of any end proposed. The end aimed at by the soul is a comforting, refreshing interest in that forgiveness that is with God. For the attaining of it, there are a number of means instituted and blessed of God. A neglect of them, through regardlessness or sloth, will certainly disappoint the soul from attaining that end. It is confessedly so in things natural. He that sows not must not think to reap. He that clothes not himself will not be warm, nor he enjoy health who neglects the means of it. Men understand this as to their outward concerns, and although they have a due respect to the blessing of God, yet they expect not to be rich without industry in their ways. It is so also in things spiritual. God has appointed one thing to be the means of obtaining another. In the use of them, he blesses us. And from the use of them does his glory arise, because they are his own appointments. In his diligence, holy respects practice, or the regular use of means, a man is said to be diligent in business, to have a diligent hand, though it be an affection of the mind. Yet it simply respects practice and operation. This diligence in his waiting, David expresses, I have waited patiently, that is, waiting. I have waited, that is, diligently, earnestly in the use of means. So he describes his duty by an elegant similitude. Behold, as the eyes of servants look to the hand of their masters, and as the eyes of a maiden to the hand of her mistress, so our eyes wait upon the Lord our God until he have mercy upon us. Servants that wait on their masters and look to their hands, it is to expect an intimation of their minds as to what they would have them do, that they may address themselves to it. So he says, do we wait for mercy? Not in slothful neglect of duties, but in a constant readiness to observe the will of God and all of his commands. An instance of this we have in the spouse when she was in the condition here described. She wanted the presence of her beloved, which amounts to the same state which we have under consideration. For where the presence of Christ is not, there can be no sense of forgiveness. At first she seeks him upon her bed. By night upon my bed I sought him whom my soul loves. I sought him, but I found him not. She seems in this to have gone no further than desires, for she was in her bed, where she could do no more, and the issue is, she did not find him. But does she so satisfy herself and lie still, waiting until he should come there to her? No, she says, I will rise now and go about the city and the streets, and in the broad ways I will seek him whom my soul loves. She resolves to put herself into the use of all means in which one may be sought that is wanting. In a city, streets, and fields, she would inquire after him, and a blessed success she had in this is reported. She found him. She held him. She would not let him go. This, then, belongs to the waiting of the soul, diligence in the use of means in which God is pleased ordinarily to communicate a sense of pardon and forgiveness is a principal part of it. What these means are is known. Prayer, meditation, reading, hearing of the word, dispensation of the sacraments, they are all appointed to this purpose. They are all means of communicating love and grace to the soul. Be not then heartless or slothful. Up and be doing. Attend with diligence to the word of grace. Be fervent in prayer, assiduous in the use of all ordinances of the church. In one or other of them, at one time or other, you will meet with him whom your soul loves, and God through him will speak peace to you. Third, expectantly. there is expectation in it, which lies in a direct opposition to all the actings of unbelief in this manner, and is the very life and soul of the duty under consideration. So the psalmist declares it, "My soul, wait only upon God, for my expectation is only from Him." The soul will not, cannot, in a due manner wait upon God unless it has expectations from Him. Unless, as James speaks, he looks to receive somewhat from Him. The soul in this condition regards forgiveness not only as by itself it is desired, but principally as it is by God promised. Thence they expect it. This is expressed in the fourth proposition before laid down, namely, this in distressed souls wait for God with earnestness, intention of mind, and expectation. As this arises from the redoubling of the expression, so principally from the nature of the comparison that he makes on himself and his waiting with them that watch for the morning. Those that watch for the morning do not only desire it and prepare for it, but they expect it and know assuredly that it will come. Though darkness may for a time be troublesome and continue longer than they would desire, yet they know that the morning has its appointed time of return, beyond which it will not tarry, and therefore they look out for its appearance on all occasions. So it is with a soul in this manner. So says David, "I will direct my prayer to you and look up." So we, the words before, are defective. In the morning, or rather every morning, I will order to you. We restrain this to prayer. I will direct my prayer to you. But this is expressed directly in the words foregoing. In the morning you shall hear my voice, that is, the voice of my prayer and supplications, as it is often supplied. And although the psalmist does sometimes repeat the same thing in different expressions, yet here he seems not so to do, but rather proceeds to declare the general frame of his spirit in walking with God. "I will," he says, "order all things towards God, so as that I may wait upon him in the ways of his appointment, and will look up." It seems in our translation to express his posture in his prayer, but the word is of another importance. It is diligently to look out after that which is coming towards us, and looking out after the accomplishment of our expectation. This is a part of our waiting for God, yea, as was said, the life of it, that which is principally intended in it. The prophet calls it his standing upon his watchtower and watching to see what God would speak to him, namely an answer to that prayer which he put up in his trouble. He is now waiting in expectation of an answer from God. And this is that which poor, weak, trembling sinners are so encouraged to do. Strengthen the weak hands and confirm the feeble knees. Say to them that are of a fearful heart, "Be strong, fear not, behold, your God will come." Weakness and discouragements are the effects of unbelief. These he would have removed with an expectation of the coming of God to the soul according to the promise. And this, I say, belongs to the waiting of the soul in the condition described. Such a one expects and hopes that God will in a season manifest himself and his love to him, and give him an experimental sense of a blessed interest and forgiveness. In the accomplishment of this purpose and promise of God, it looks out after continually. It will not despond and be heartless, but stir up and strengthen itself to a full expectation to have the desires of a soul satisfied in due time, as we find David doing in places almost innumerable. This is a duty that, in the first place, is recommended to the soul who is persuaded that there is forgiveness with God, but doesn't see his own interest in it. Wait on, wait for the Lord. And it has two properties when it is performed in a due manner, namely, patience and perseverance. By the one, men are kept to the length of God's time. By the other, they are preserved in a due length of their own duty.